Welcome back to That Triathlon Show, the podcast presented by scientifictriathlon.com. I'm your host Michael, and today's episode is a bonus episode outside of regular scheduling with Andy Blow from our show sponsor Precision Fuel and Hydration. We won't have show notes for this episode, but we will have plenty of links in the episode description in your podcast app for further reading and learning. We'll jump right into the chat with Andy now, but do remember that if you want to shop for Precision Fuel and Hydration products, use the code TTS24 for 15% off your first order of 2024 on precisionfuelandhydration.com. Now here's the chat with Andy Blow from Precision Fuel and Hydration. Welcome back to That Triathlon Show, Andy, with some exciting news this time. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thanks, Michael. Yeah, I've been keeping busy the last few weeks, it has to be said.
Yeah, so tell the listeners who might not have been following what's been going on, what's new with Precision Fuel and Hydration?
Well, the big news in triathlon is that we are the official partner for the Ironman and Ironman 70.3 European Series for hydration, and that includes the 2024 VinFast Ironman World Championships in Nice. So, yeah, really exciting times. We've got some of our products out on course, and we're going to have quite an involvement in some of the races throughout the year. So, yeah, it's been a busy period, kind of pulling all of that together behind the scenes. But we announced it the other day, and the announcement's been received really well.
Yeah, so congratulations first of all. That's really exciting news. So this, to be clear, does this cover every single Ironman 70.3 and Ironman race in Europe? From what date, or are there any exceptions? Any races that are not included?
Yeah, so it starts on the 19th of May at Aix-en-Provence, which is coming up really quickly now. And then it incorporates all of the European series races, except for those. There are a handful of races that are not run corporately by Ironman. I think they're kind of licensed races still. So that those licensed races take on their own partnerships for different categories, but that's only really, like I say, a handful of races. I think it's over 40 races that we're involved in this year. And of course, the big one from a sort of profile perspective is the VinFast Ironman World Championships in Nice.
Yeah, right. So what exactly are the products that will be on course from you, from Precision Fuel and Hydration?
Really simple for us on this one. It's the PH1000 electrolyte tablets, and so for hydration only. Morton are still the fueling partner for the Ironman races, so there's going to be Morton gels and Morton bars on course, as well as real foods, you know, bananas and those kind of things. But from a hydration perspective, there'll be water and there'll be PH1000 electrolyte tablets, but they won't be given out in tablet form, obviously. The tablets will be pre-mixed so that you get them in 750ml bottles on the bike, or you get the drink in cups on the run.
Yeah, right. Well, that basically answers what would have been my next question. And I think the one that is the most common questions that I've seen since the announcement that people have, why don't you have the carb drink mixes or the gels and products like that available? And it's because you're the hydration partner, and the Morton is still the fueling partner for the series.
Yeah, correct. And I think it's a combination of those kind of practical rationale, which we'll probably talk about in a bit more detail in a minute, which is about the fact that actually there's some benefits to having a low carb or zero calorie kind of but high sodium electrolyte drink to decouple your fueling from your hydration somewhat in long races. That's one of the reasons why we opted for that product. And then the other reason is that Morton are very clearly the fueling partner and we are the hydration partner. So I think having those two products alongside each other is a good compliment. We would, in some ways, and I know a lot of the people who've written to us, having seen the announcement, would love to have our gels and chews and things and carb drinks on the course, but at the moment that's not possible. So we're starting out with the hydration partnership.
Yeah. So let's go into that then, the decoupling of the electrolytes or the hydration side and the nutrition side. I will link to previous episodes that we've done where we have talked about this in detail as well, so people can go and educate themselves further. But yeah, let's run through that. What are the benefits here between decoupling those two?
Yeah, I think the first thing to point out probably is that there's many, many different ways to get your fueling and hydration right for an Ironman, and we've talked about quite a few of them in the past, and different people have different opinions. And the only thing I will say is that the only right approach is the one that works for you as an individual, gets you to the finish line in good shape. So we do see plenty of Ironman athletes who use, if not exclusively, use an element of all-in-one fueling and hydration solution, so carbohydrate and electrolyte drinks as part of their plan. I think the thing, again, that you and I have talked about in the past is that when you decouple your fueling from your hydration, it does make it really, really simple, and it reduces the sort of complexity and the potential for error when you're trying to get your fluid, sodium, and carbohydrate numbers right. And we've always talked about these three things, these three levers of fluid, sodium, and carbs being the three things you need to get in the right zone for you on race day. And when you put all three of them in one bottle, as you do with a carbohydrate electrolyte drink, that can work well for periods, or it can work well certainly for shorter events. When events get longer, you sometimes need to adjust your hydration separately to your fueling, because fueling numbers tend to be relatively static. If you use an example, Mike, if you can do 80 or 90 grams of carbohydrate an hour for a long race, that's probably going to be the case that you're going to need that, and you're going to want to hit that kind of number almost regardless of the weather conditions. But if it's a really cold race, you might drink one third of the volume of fluid in total and need one third of the electrolytes that you would in a really, really hot race. And of course, if you've got everything in one bottle, you can't decouple those things and adjust them separately. So this is where I think in longer races, there's a strong role for separating those two parameters out.
Yeah, no, it does make perfect sense. And I think to me, the challenge with the doing that is the logistics more so than anything. But from just hitting your numbers, getting the numbers right, I think it really makes sense. And especially if you struggle with getting your nutrition right, getting your hydration right, then it probably is worth making a bit of a sacrifice on the logistics side of things if it means slowing down a bit more often to picking things up or carrying something that is maybe not aerodynamically optimal compared to potentially then having problems and not being able to finish the race or finishing it really slowly. So I think that there's maybe a trade-off between logistics and what is optimal from hydration and nutrition. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, we know that people are very, you know, use the example there, aerodynamics being very optimized, and that can save seconds to minutes over the course of the bike ride in an Ironman for sure. But if you only use tiny aero drink bottles and fail to drink enough liquid, or you can't carry enough gels so that you don't fuel yourself properly, that can cost you minutes or tens of minutes or even potentially an hour or more on the run if you don't get that right. So I think it does come down to that kind of prioritization of, you know, what really matters to get you to the finish line. And we've seen a lot of people that we work with using quite creative ways to carry their fuel and hydration if they want to keep it separately. It's why we brought out the product that we did last year, the Flow Gel, which is obviously a large pouch of gel. Each pouch has 300 grams of carbohydrate. It's the same ingredients as our standard energy gel, but it's in the cooking process when it's made, we use different temperatures and that allows it to be runnier. So it flows better, and you can actually tip 300 grams of carbohydrate into a 500 milliliter kind of 16 ounce water bottle. You can carry that on your bike, and then in one bottle cage, you've got enough fuel for 3 to 4 hours. And then alongside picking up hydration products, for example, that with fluids and electrolytes in, that's a really simple way to do that decoupling neatly and actually probably in that case not affect your aerodynamics too.
Yeah, definitely. No, I've been training with the Flow Gel now over the past couple of weeks for a couple of key sessions in preparation for the longer races that are starting to come here. And I've found that, yeah, it really makes things easy with hitting your numbers on the carbohydrate side but also getting in the hydration separately. So definitely a big fan of that. But going back to the hydration then, and what will be on course from your side in the Ironman European Series. So you have the pH 1000, which is 1000 milligrams of sodium per liter, meaning that in a 750 ml bottle, you get 750 milligrams of sodium. How do you suggest that people approach that, depending on if they are an average salty sweater versus above or below average?
Yeah, that's a really good question. That was one that we've been asked a few times already. And the main suggestion there is that, 1,000 milligrams per liter is about the middle of the average curve, actually, when we measure athlete sweat. So the majority of athletes will sit somewhere between kind of 800 and 1,200 milligrams of sodium per liter of sweat. If you are on the lower side, though, or you know that you just don't need as much salt and sodium when you're racing, the suggestion is to pick up bottles of water more frequently and bottles of pH 1000 less frequently. If, on the other hand, you're like me and you're very salty, and you'd ideally go for something, your main hydration drink would be more like 1500 milligrams of sodium per liter, then what I would be doing in an Ironman is taking the pH 1000, but also carrying some electrolyte capsules with me, or some salt tablets, and taking those with the pH 1000 at roughly the right ratio to make sure that I was getting the mix that I wanted. So although we've only got the one product on course, with a little bit of creativity either way, you can either titrate it to an overall weaker strength by having more water, or an overall stronger strength by topping it up with some electrolyte capsules.
Yeah. And you could, of course, also start with something like, on the bike, with something like the pH 1500 in the hydration bottles that you are carrying. That makes sense. Along those lines, you have made some updates to the fuel and hydration planner on your website to actually include the European series races. So can you explain a bit what you've done there and how that might be useful for people racing those races?
The fuel and hydration planner is designed to obviously give you an estimate of your three levers, how much fluid, sodium and carbohydrate you're going to need at a given race. And it takes into account individual factors about yourself. So you fill out some physiological details. It also takes into account the distance, the intensity, the duration and the climate of the race that you're going to do. And so the great thing about having the partnership with Ironman is it means we can build all of the stuff about the races directly into the planner. So if you click on a certain race that you're doing, we know the distance, we know the date, we know the likely environmental conditions based on weather forecasts. So you can actually get a much more seamless experience of getting an individualized plan through that. So it's basically it's a slicker way of building a plan without having to put so many details in.
What exactly changes compared to a generic, if I'm using just a generic Ironman as a template in the planner, versus, let's say, I'm 1 week out from Ironman Hamburg and the forecasts show 26 degrees Celsius and sunny. What are the changes that might occur there, or how does it differ with having specific races? Also, do you take into account for something like Ironman Nice that it's a hilly bike course, so you're longer out on the course? Are those sorts of things implemented in the planner?
Good question. Yeah, in terms of the things like the course profile, at the moment that's not accounted for in the planner to make it specific. Where the way that is inadvertently accounted for is we ask you for estimates of your bike and run time, swim bike and run times, which will probably be reflected in that, as in no one's going to expect to ride an overall as fast a time at Nice as they would in, say, Hamburg or Barcelona or something like that. So that remains dynamic. And then the main benefit is having the information about the race and the date and things pre-entered. So rather than giving you a generic piece of advice, it will be tailored towards those weather conditions. But I would say in reality, the numbers that the fuel and hydration planner spit out for any Ironman at a given intensity, duration, and in given environmental conditions will be the same as our current planner. It's just that you have to input quite a bit less information in this instance in order to get those outputs. So it's a bit of a smoother experience.
All right. Yeah, got it. So let's take a couple of possible scenarios. If I'm an athlete and I'm planning to race one of the summer Ironmans in Europe in, let's assume here, hot conditions to make it as interesting as possible. And in scenario A here, I'm somebody that likes to be as self-sufficient as possible. How would you go about knowing what will be on course, planning or helping me plan my fuel and hydration for that scenario?
Yeah, I think if you want to be as self-sufficient as possible, I think if where it's possible, I always like to think having three bottles on the bike is a really good setup, a minimum of three bottles. You can often have, you know, on a standard bike, you might be able to fit one on the tri-bars, which is like an aero drinking system, one on the down tube, and then one behind the seat. You might get either two behind the seat, or you might also get one on the down tube, one on the seat tube, just depending on the layout and size of your bike. But if you've got three bottles, I think the way I would be doing it is I'd be starting with one bottle, which is predominantly my fuel source, or almost exclusively fuel source. So that might be flow gel, it might be individual gels put into a bottle with some water, but you want to get the majority of your calories and your carbs into that vessel. And then the way I've seen that done best with using our products is flow gel in a bottle to the requisite amount. And then a lot of athletes will obviously use caffeine in an Ironman as well. And flow gel doesn't have any caffeine in it. So then you would have two or three caffeinated gels alongside that, kind of in a bento box or on your top tube or stuffed in your pockets as you leave T1, to take care of the majority of the fueling needs. If you're someone who likes to have something a little bit different to eat on the bike, maybe some chews or an energy bar, that kind of thing, then I'd have those stashed on the bike from the start. And with a lot of the pro athletes we work with, they will almost exclusively have a setup like that with all of their calories already on the bike, so they're ready to go. In addition to that, I'd maybe be starting with, if you can't get all of your fuel in one bottle, some of it goes in the second bottle, and that might be in the form of a super concentrated drink mix. So you've used a high carb drink mix, or it could be more flow gel or gels. And then the third bottle is either going to be water, or it'll be your preferred strength of electrolyte drink, which is the one that you're then going to top up as you go around. So that would typically be the one between your bars, because that's where it's easiest to just pick up a bottle from volunteers at the side of the road, squeeze it into an opening of an aero bottle, and then carry on like that. So I think for self-sufficiency on the bike, that's the route I would go. In terms of then moving it onto the run, I would say if it's a hot race, really, really good idea to either consider carrying a small belt with bottles, or, you know, like an old style fuel belt, or a belt which carries a single kind of drinks bottle in it, or a lot of what I've seen. More so now, I've seen some people using the kind of hand flasks that the ultra runners are using. So it's like a bottle slightly shaped with a glove attachment to it that fits on the back of your hand. You can put one of those on as you leave transition, so you at least start the run with some of your own preferred drink. And that might be something of a different flavor or composition to mix things up, or it might just be your preferred strength of electrolyte drink in there. And that encourages you to really start the run with a good hydration routine. In terms of gels, depending how long you're going to be out there, you might not want to carry all of your gels for the run, but I would suggest carrying a reasonable amount, whatever your pockets can comfortably hold. And then you can rely on aid stations to pick up the on-course Morton gels. They're 25 grams of carbohydrate each. There's also flat Coca-Cola on the course, which is about 10 grams of carbs per 100 mil. And judging by the testing we've done, you can't ever be exact about this, but I would say most paper cups probably hold somewhere between 150 and 200 mil. So we're banking on using those Coke cups to represent about 15 to 20 grams of carbs. So that'd probably be the way that I would look to be as self-sufficient as possible going through a hot race.
Yeah, no, that's a great rundown. And what about if I don't want to be, and let's take a specific scenario, for example, the World Championships in Nice or the general Ironman Nice, you might want to maybe rely a bit more on aid stations and not carry four bottles or even three bottles if you can avoid it up that long climb. So, or whatever the reason might be that you want to rely more on aid stations and you don't care for being self-sufficient, how would you approach that scenario?
Yeah, the scenario where I've seen that most commonly is not necessarily where people say per se don't want to carry as much, although that can be the case. This probably penalizes people who've got small bikes. So if you've got people who've got like extra small frame sizes, obviously adding lots and lots of bottles, that A, the if you're small and you only weigh 50 kilos and your bike's quite small and light, suddenly putting kilos and kilos of fluid on it makes a big difference. Plus, you might not have the attachments to do so. And in that scenario, I'd always say to people, look, well worth still prioritizing to carry a decent amount of concentrated fuel on the bike if you can fit a flow gel bottle or a kind of concentrated gel bottle, because you are going to need fuel, a significant amount of fuel, even between aid stations. And the ability to pick up gels in significant numbers on the bike is going to be quite hard. So I'd say prioritize carrying your fuel. Maybe just have, so if you've got two bottles set up, one bottle dedicated to fuel, one bottle dedicated to hydration, and that you'd probably start with an electrolyte drink or water in there. And then on the course, you've got to be really, really accurate about picking up gels or they've got Morton bars on the course as well. And they, if you eat a whole Morton bar, they're split into two pieces, but the whole bar is about 41 to 42 grams of carbs. So that's a kind of a decent amount of fuel to be taking on to supplement what you're carrying, but definitely presents more of a challenge if you're wanting to go light, because what you may gain in a little bit of efficiency on the bike, you would lose if you missed too many aid stations or had to slow down, or even worse, go back to an aid station or something like that. So, because we all know that actually, unless you practice it a lot, and we saw it even with the PTO races, the T100 race in Singapore, it's difficult for pros to pick bottles and gels up on the bike, let alone amateurs who don't do it very often. So, whereas compared with on the run, way, way easier. You can definitely, rely on picking up a decent amount of fuel and hydration on the run, because again, everyone except the fastest athletes are probably going to walk a little bit of the marathon anyway, and walking through an aid station to ensure you get enough cups of fluid and enough gels is a no-brainer really compared with on the bike.
Yeah, and we've seen high profile cases of even some of the fastest professional athletes doing that in some of the big races, so not a bad strategy at all for anybody. I think that's most of the questions that I have. Do you have anything else to add that we haven't discussed?
I think mainly just to say to people, look, if people have got questions about any of this or their Ironman races or other triathlons in general, they can always reach out and email our team here at PFNH on hello@precisionhydration.com. We've obviously got the fuel and hydration planner. People can still book free video calls, and they can specifically book video calls to talk about their Ironman races. And also, we'd love to have some feedback from people, because this is the very start of the partnership with Ironman. We understand that from our audience, a lot of people are asking, can you not put the gels on course? Can you not put the drink mixes on course? And, at the moment we can't, but who knows where it might go in the future. So we will listen to people's requests and feedback, and we'll do what we can. So like we always say, we're here to help and serve the athletes. If people want to get in touch and have one-to-one help, we'd be delighted to see what we can do.
Yeah, great. I'll put some links in the episode description. So I'm not sure if there will be show notes for this episode, actually, but there will be an episode description, so people can look in their podcast app, whether it's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever, and find all of the relevant links. Also to some of our previous interviews, of course, the planner, and anything else relevant that we've mentioned that I've missed right now. But yeah, look through the links and see if you need more information. You can probably find something good there. So thank you so much, Andy, for explaining all of this to us, and hope for everybody to have a great summer of European Ironman races.
Yeah, absolutely. We're excited for it. First stop for us will be, a few of us will be at Ironman Hamburg, so I'm really excited to see that one go on.
Excellent. Speak soon. Take care. Bye-bye.